One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, how you be? Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on this Thursday. Welcome into One Bills Live. Thanks for making us a part of your afternoon. As we are still in the throes of draft discussion and debate and analysis, and we'll get to our topic of conversation in just a little bit here. If you listened to yesterday's show, you might have heard Steve and I talking about our chores in the yard. Apparently it went better for me than it did for Steve in his expansive estate that has low-lying areas of ground. Couldn't get to all of it, could you, Steve?
You know how it is. You get out there and you start doing it and say, well, I'll just do a little more because you don't want to have to come back.
And you don't want uneven grass in one area of your place. And
excuse me. What Brownie's getting at is I drive a Wrangler, right? A Jeep Wrangler. I had to get the Wrangler out in four-wheel drive and pull my mower out of a low spot in the, which, as some of you know, leaves scars on your lawn. Yeah, and if you give 2 cents about what your lawn looks like, the last thing you want is what I did. Just because I want to get that last swath, whatever.
Is it time to call your neighborhood lawn
roller? I'm so ticked about it.
Do you know, not since I started living here did I realize that, like, lawn rolling is a thing. Have you seen these guys with the, like, mini?
Yeah.
You know, they look like steamrollers. You know,
absolutely.
They just drag,
they put them around. Yeah.
I never knew that
highly underrated
for lawns.
But I do need to get one. But you know how I've got two tire tracks, you know, and I got a lawn tractor it's got wide tires and they're smooth, so they don't leave treads. You know, it's gentle.
But now you have no traction.
It's right. So when they spin,
you're done.
It's an atrocity.
How long does it
It's an atrocity.
How long does it take you to yank that thing out of the muck? That can't be. Because here's the thing. You're like, I want to get the lawn done.
Well,
and then trouble happens. And now you're like looking at your watch. You're like, this is going to take another half an hour.
I've got it down to a science.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. I've done it. I've done it so much.
You know how to pulling it out of the muck.
30 seconds.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
I got like a big toe strap, presto change, out, gone, done.
Okay.
But the scarring will last for months now. It'll be the end of the summer before it's fixed.
That's all right.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so mad.
You can massage that while the ground's still
mad.
Soft. No, you'll be fine.
I just tell, and it doesn't matter. I'm the only one who cares. I don't need that last swath over there. I'll just get it next time. After these next 3 days of heat, I'll just run out there, zip, zip. I'll do it. But no.
Yeah, it's that little thing in your head that says, it'd be nice if he could finish all of it.
I hate myself.
Yeah, I fall into that trap. I
hate myself.
And I was like, knew I shouldn't have cut that extra row.
It's just,
I knew this was the breaking point.
It's not every, and it's like, I thought I was better this year because I like left half my yard unmowed. Like there's a look, you know. I left half of it undone. Just leave it. I'm fine. It's gonna nobody else. It's fine. The Amazon guy, all my friends that come by, that part's all cleared out. It's all looks great. Just leave it.
Looking good from the road.
Oh, yeah. My gosh, I'm such an idiot.
It's happened to all of us. Yeah, my funny thing was I'm trying to fill in a rock bed, you know, and I'm kind of assessing the the length by the width, you know, and I'm like. 8 bags of rocks,
perfect.
You know, at the local big box store will do it.
Yeah.
Just spread them all out. I'll just spread it thin, you know. I'll cover the surface area here. I come back with 8 bags, and you would have thought I used one.
Right.
I was like, I got a lot more area to fill here. Well, 8 more should do it.
Right.
So, you know, they're like $5 a bag. So I go back, get another 8 bags, you know, just lay it all out. Son of a gun. I've only got 2/3 of this area covered.
Get another 8.
How many? So I'm looking at the bag. How many square feet does this say this bag covers? Like, it's got to be more than this. There's a lot of rocks in here.
Oh, my God.
I had to go back. Third trip. Another 8 bags. So now.
You went from 8 to 24 bags?
8 to 24. 24 did it. And just barely. Just barely.
You're right. Yeah, you could have used another two bags, right?
Probably. Probably, but I was not doing that.
You weren't going
I'm not making four trips. So I can't wait for the credit card to come. And my wife's going to be like,
Did they
charge
you?
You got three trips in 4 days to the same big box store, and it's the same exact price, all three. What happened? I'm going to be like, well,
honey,
a few more bags of rocks tonight. But it's done. It looks good. Cross it off the list.
Yeah, it's beautiful weather, man. It's great. This is now.
Tomorrow might be 80.
Yeah, and it's over. This is gonna
be home free.
Yeah, we're kind of home free now. It's gonna get rainy again and stuff, but I think I'm done scraping my windows.
Oh, I put my windshield scraper in my little rear compartment. You know,
right,
where you put your
you
jumper
put it away.
Cables and your
you put it away
in the back of your car.
Right.
Yeah,
not behind the front,
under
the driver's
little
seat.
Shelf
it's not behind the driver's seat anymore.
No.
Right.
It's in with the first aid kit.
That's
and
right.
The other stuff.
Right.
That's where it is.
Yeah.
And it'll live there until
about
November.
I do think we're done scraping windows.
How bad is that? Saying that May 2nd.
Well, it's May.
It should be better than that, right? Should be conceivably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm feel good about saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Feel good about saying that.
The NFL released the dates yesterday for all of the clubs that for their rookie mini camps, the rookie mini camp dates for the Bills. That's going to be next Thursday as they go. May 10th to the 11th is rookie minicamp. So all the draft choices, the undrafted rookie signings, which will probably be announced sometime next week officially, after those players get in and sign those contracts, they'll all be out there along with a good number of tryout players because
right. The
draft class and about 10 or 12 undrafted rookie signings are not enough to stage a practice. So they bring in tryout players who are looking for a look-see.
Right.
And that way they can fill out and capably practice on both sides of the ball, special teams,
I
got to
tell you, think about this. You got, you know, you didn't know if you'd get drafted. You're from a small school or whatever, maybe mm-hmm. like John Carroll or maybe like St. John Fisher and all the schools around here, not UB so much, but, you know, Alfred or whoever around here has got a football team. And you get a chance because you got some measurables. You're big enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you know, you want to come? It is such a thrill. So they, man, let's go. And for that day, at least even if they say thanks for showing up, but we're not going to sign you.
So
just for that day, you're part of it.
Yeah.
You know, really cool.
Now, I remember several years back, rookie minicamp was often the following week, right after the draft.
Right.
They were in the next week. They were here. Now, the league has since changed that. You can have players in for rookie minicamp the week after or the following week. So you have a 2-week window in which to conduct your 2 or 3 day minicamp, depending
right.
on how many days you want them in. And from what I can see on this list, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, only 5 teams starting tomorrow, their rookie minicamp.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle's doing that. Baltimore is doing that. Philadelphia, the Jets.
Whenever anything's like that.
And Kansas City.
To me, maybe I'm wrong. I haven't checked that list of clubs against a salary cap, but a lot of it kind of might be financial. We got to redo this so we can sign these kids and get them in. That's probably part of it, but this rookie minicamp thing, it has always been because you've been off for a couple of months. You know, the coaching staff, so now they're back. Like, they got the vets in here now. They're running through phase two of this. You know, they're out, got helmets on and stuff. So everybody starts to get the itch now, right? And the coaching staff realizes, like, man, we got to install this. We got to get going. And it has always been, man, you draft these guys, get them in. Even when I got in the 80s, when I got drafted, like the next week, it was the entire team was on the field. Let's go. In helmets. Putting install in. It was big.
Yeah.
They can't – the itch starts to get these guys, and they start getting antsy about, man, we're going to fall behind. So they always – and that's why the CBA and the players union stepped in and said, whoa, you're not having two-a-days in May.
Yeah, just a second there.
Hold up. So, and plus now, too, a lot of smart coaches are getting the sports science people involved, and they go through the whole year, and they lay out how long does it take to do this, and they how long does it take to do that, and how long does it take to do that, and they lay it out, and they you know they have a little common sense and some scientific data to look at before they just throw everybody on the field in helmets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a year round deal, man. We're living proof of that. You and me.
Oh yeah,
we're doing a football radio show 4 months after the season was over.
Well, we did have a draft.
Every day.
Yeah. Well, there are because the league has done an expert job of setting up 10 pole off-season events.
I tell all my buddies,
and we talk
you
about
know
the
this.
Draft for over two
yeah.
months.
You and I know. We go out and talk to people, and they go, "What do you how's your radio? When are you going to start the radio show again?" I'm like,
"We didn't stop.
We never stopped." They go, "Wait, you do that every? Well, hey, Bills fans got to know."
Yeah. Speaking of what they need to know, let's get to Around the NFL, which is presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And the biggest news of the day is it is deadline day for teams to exercise their fifth-year option on first-round picks from the 2021 draft class. As we know, Bills have already picked up the fifth-year option on Greg Rousseau, so he's locked in after this season on his fifth-year option. We'll see if they decide after this year that a contract extension is a better way to go for the cap and for everybody involved, for that matter. And then a lot of these players have had their fifth-year options picked up. Trevor Lawrence obviously getting picked up by the Jaguars, Kyle Pitts, Jamar Chase, Jalen Waddle, Patrick Surtain, Devontae Smith. Penei Sewell signed a contract extension last week, so the fifth-year option not necessary for him. Micah Parsons, Rashawn Slater, Elijah Vera Tucker, even though he's coming off a major injury, and Jalen Phillips had his option picked up coming off Achilles surgery.
Wow.
I thought that was a little bit of a risk by Miami.
It is. The interesting one is also there because of the trade and what happened in Chicago is Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh told him they wouldn't.
Yeah, they're a no.
And that, to me, pretty smart and gutsy by the Steelers, because if the guy comes out and hits it out of the park, he's a free agent.
Well, yeah, and that's the puzzling thing for me, because Tomlin has said in no uncertain terms that Russell Wilson is the starter going into camp and, you know, for the regular season.
Yeah.
And you've only got Fields on essentially a one-year contract.
Right. How you find out?
You got to find out about him.
By the same token, his price is not going to go crazy either, though. If he's on the bench all year behind Russ Wilson, it'll say something about Justin Fields that'll make people go, eh. But the Steelers will at least know from watching him every day and practicing every day. They may hope that it is really difficult to keep him on the bench because he's playing good and all. Because if they get him on the field and he starts winning, then they're on the hook. But you know, by the same token, though, who cares? You got a guy.
The other thing I saw on him, which was interesting, was according to, and this is secondhand from a player who said, their special teams coach in Pittsburgh, Danny Smith, said, "We may have Justin Fields back there on kickoff return." Now, he was a 1,000-yard rusher for the Chicago Bears two seasons ago.
Well, think about it, though. You're talking about throwbacks, you know, with a guy with an arm who can also, like, you got to tackle him.
Well, yeah, not only that, the kickoff return now is going to be more like a line of scrimmage play.
That's exactly right. And he's big.
And elusive.
Yes, it's a good idea, and I think it's intriguing to think about, but I think it's way more interesting. Justin Fields has maybe the most interesting situation in the league because of the fifth-year option not getting picked up. They're not on the hook for any money for him, hardly any. They're not on the hook for any money for Russ Wilson except, you know, just a little because of the Broncos paying him.
Mm-hmm.
So both these guys go in there, and they've got an enormously hot flame under them to perform this year because they both want to keep playing. Now, Russ maybe not as hot a flame as Justin Fields because Russ is at the end of it. And he's been making
36.
He's been making a couple of dozen million dollars a year for a while now. So he's got a stack of cash anyway. So he may not be as, you know, the fire might not burn as bright for Russ as it does for Justin Fields, but that guy's got to be sitting there going, "Man, give me a chance with a franchise that doesn't kill quarterbacks. And that's Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So that, and he's, but he's got to earn it now, right? Mike Tomlin has said, look, you got to earn it from Russ Wilson, Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's really because, interesting.
Well, yeah, all the quarterbacks are the question marks in this 21 class, you know, outside of Trevor Lawrence. I mean, Zach Wilson was told by the Broncos, yeah, we're not picking that up.
Sure.
I mean, they just acquired him via trade.
They're not going to give him $20 million no, guaranteed. Forget it.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
And obviously, Mac Jones, it's a no from the Jaguars, is their backup quarterback to Trevor Lawrence. And then you have Trey Lance, who's with the Cowboys and is probably not going to get one either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these 50-year options, Christian Darrisaw, Travis Etienne, Greg Newsome, Odafe Oweh just got his fifth-year option picked up yesterday by the Ravens, and then they signed their other first-round pick, Rashad Bateman, to a two-year extension, thereby eliminating the need. The big one left, Najee Harris with the Steelers.
That's a no.
Because he's a running back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a no.
I mean, it is one way to extend him another year. It's just at a premium price. I would much rather sign him to a two-year extension. Say, hey, let's give you security for 2 years and pay him less average annual value if you can.
I have, knowing what, just from what we've experienced in Buffalo with the Bills, with Ty Johnson, Murray, I mean, you go down the list of guys we've had through this building.
Well, Damian Harris is here on a one-year contract. Has a head injury and retires.
Right. But he also gave us some production before that. I mean,
yeah. My point there is how fleeting it can be.
It is.
At the running back
it
position.
It is. There are probably guys unsigned out there on that. I'll look it up, but I hate to say it like this. I don't want to disrespect them because they're all Warriors. There's too many of them.
Yeah.
There's too many of them that are and the elite ones. It's a small gap between elite as a running back and just really good.
Mm-hmm.
Small gap. So just you can get two really good ones.
Right.
For the price of less than an elite one. And you could get some guys that are just need the chance for nothing who would you know, jump in front of a train for you.
Yeah.
So it's hard to justify. First of all, taking one in the first round, which they've already made that mistake, if you ask me. Then to pick up their fifth-year option, you got to.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I don't either.
The only other big name out there without a fifth-year option picked up yet is Kwity Paye, the pass rusher from the Colts, had an 8.5 sack season last year, and he's still sitting there. So he doesn't get one by the end of the day today. He could be looking at free agency next year, and if he has a good season, you take an 8.5 sack season and add a 10 sack season, watch how much that guy gets next year.
Right. So you got guys like – it would be interesting to see – and I lost the – hold on.
Well, all these guys that I put on a list are yeses, with the exceptions of the ones that are still outstanding. I mean, Eric Stokes from Green Bay, he's not getting one. He's been too injured. I think he's missed over 20 games the last 2 years. Yeah, he's missed 22 games the last 2 years. He's not getting a fifth-year option. There's just no way.
I'm looking at these names, and I don't even know. Are these guys – these guys aren't – Saquon, a free agent? Is this the wrong list I'm looking
not
at?
Not the right draft class.
I'm just looking at all
– You're looking at running backs.
Running backs, free agents.
No, he's in Philly.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, okay. I got to get this page on the right way. But you're right. There's just too many guys out there. Too many guys out there to do it. And yeah, I'm just not a fan.
Yeah.
It's the position right now at this point in history is not valuable enough to pay a guy more than as a role player.
And to your point, there are always more coming up out of college that you can just draft and plug in.
There's no legs like fresh legs.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw this report. The Falcons, who have already gotten enough criticism for the Michael Penix pick, they apparently tried to trade back up into the top 10 after picking at 8 to make a trade with the Jets to try to get Leatu Latu at 10 overall. Now you know why Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts, was laughing so hard when they got him at 15.
He was a top tenner.
He was cackling, saying, "We just got the best pass rusher in the draft," which may also explain why Quiddy Pay doesn't have a fifth-year option. May just be cycling another guy through. Dolphins owner Stephen Ross turned down a $10 billion offer for control of the club, the stadium, and the F1 race that they host every year. $10 billion. Steve, do you think you'd ever say no to $10 billion?
I'd have to say no.
I mean, can you imagine being in a position where somebody offers you $10 billion and you're like, "Nah, I'm good." That, I would say there's five people on the planet that can do that. Yeah. Willingly and mean it.
Yeah. I don't know. Five.
No.
It's probably more
than
that.
$10 billion.
$10 billion.
I can't even wrap my head around that.
We'll give you $10 billion for the Dolphins, the stadium, and the F1 race. I'm gonna have to say no to that.
Well, I guess if you hold all control of all those things and you don't want to relinquish control, you do say no to $10 billion. But everybody has a price. Everybody has a price. I mean,
well,
everything,
yes, everything is for sale. Everything
so
is for
what
sale.
So what do you think it takes to knock Stephen Ross off that perch? $20
billion? I don't know.
$15 billion? Like, how many billions are we talking about here to get him to seriously consider? Like, do you think he even went to his accountant and said, "Hey, I know what my net worth is. Can you give me the net worth of the franchise, the stadium, and the F1 race that we host every year, and tell me what I'm looking at there? What would be a fair offer?" Do you think he goes back to his accountant to vet the $10 billion offer he got, or is he just outright say, "No, I'm good. I like what I have, and I want to hold on to it"?
You know, it just occurred to me. Or if you're the guy that says, "How about if I just give you $10 billion for all that?" What do you say? Who does that?
Yeah.
Who's the other side of that conversation?
I'm guessing some shake in.
Maybe. Dude.
Those guys are made of money out there.
Dude, let's think about it, too. That's a very respectful offer.
Oh, no.
It's generous. No,
I think
he ain't lowballing you.
No, I don't think so. I think part of the reason why, you know, NFL teams appreciate in value considerably every year. They usually outpace inflation, although nowadays that might be a little different. The stadium hosts Super Bowls,
yeah,
you know, among other things. And then F1 has taken off like a rocket in the last 3 years in terms of valuation of race teams, the circuit itself, the net revenue of race events. So I get it. I get the offer. It just got me to thinking, like, how many people on the planet are going to say no to $10 billion?
Who's got the coin?
That's amazing.
Who's got the coin to make the offer? And then who's got the security in their side? Just say, I'm good.
Thanks.
I like what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I like what I'm doing.
That's wild to me.
Bless his heart.
That is beyond the 1%.
And I got to tell you,
that's the 0.2%.
I don't have any love lost for any of the Dolphins owner, you know, Stephen Ross.
Yeah.
But I got to tip my hat to him. I got to tip my hat to the guy. Goodness gracious.
Yeah. Last bit of news here. We heard Commissioner Roger Goodell, among other NFL executives, float out the mention of an 18-game regular season and just a 2-game preseason, along with an extra bye week, which would then push the Super Bowl to President's Day weekend.
Yeah.
Mark Maskey of the Washington Post now reporting that the NFL may try to get the NFL Players Association to agree to an 18th regular season game before the expiration of the current CBA in 2031. That's when, you know, the doors are open to that, but it sounds as if ownership would like to get there sooner rather than later. Obviously, it means extra revenue. It also means when the new media deals come around for contracts and whatnot, they can ask for even more money.
They're doing it wrong. They're doing it wrong. They should move the season further into July and August.
August, yeah.
Get two regular season games in the end of August, and then take Labor Day weekend off. Get two games in before Labor Day.
Bye week for the whole league?
Whole league. Everybody's off.
This is the Tasker plan, if I remember right.
The nation takes a holiday on Labor Day weekend. Let baseball play.
Well, I think they're
thinking
the same thing on the other end. Right. For President's Day.
Well, President's Day, though. No, they'd be playing the Super Bowl on President's Day.
That's what I mean.
Weekend.
But everybody's off on Monday.
Yeah.
Party over here.
Well,
party over there.
They're still doing it wrong because it should be Super Bowl Saturday, not Super Bowl Sunday, because you got 2 weeks anyway. Give it on Saturday. Everybody travel on Sunday. Have a day off. And then presto changeo. That's how they should do it.
Okay.
Two games, late July, early September, Labor Day
late
off.
August.
Late August. Labor Day off for everybody. And then it's a 16-game schedule with a 16-game schedule with a bye week sprinkled in for everybody, like what they do. And then this playoffs start as per usual. And then it should be Super Bowl Saturday, not Super Bowl Sunday. Hmm.
I wonder how they feel about the Labor Day hiatus for the league. It's like you just got everybody ramped up for regular season football. I could see the league overly enthused
about
that because
think about it.
You started the season, everybody's amped, and then for a week you go dark.
Yes.
That's just not the way they operate.
No, it creates an appetite. You get those. It's like, all right, now we got it. No, because then it'll be great because. That's the way to do it. It's absolutely the way to do it.
So I'm not saying that they're going to lose viewers because they take off for a week as a league.
They used to, remember now, they don't start until after Labor Day for a reason.
Because it's still for largely an outdoor barbecue holiday and people aren't in front of their television.
Give it to them. And just have two games in by then. So then everybody can like, hey, this is all. It's all. And then you can heal up for 2 weeks. Everybody gets to heal up. It'll be 2 weeks of training camp, two preseason games, two regular season games. Let's take a break. Let's get healed. All right, we got a guy now. There'll be windows for players to be activated after a couple of weeks and the bye week. They say, well, give him the first 2 weeks. You know, we'll give him the two preseason games the first 2 weeks. Then he'll be ready by week three or week four. When we come back from Labor Day, we'll be ready to go. 16 games, let's go. Let me just say, that's the way it should be done.
All right.
You can't convince me otherwise. The Tasker plan should be in.
I'd rather start later and have more of my summer.
The summer doesn't change. It starts right then.
Yeah.
Starts when it always does for us. Go to training camp at the same time. A weekend, 2 weeks, 2 weeks in, game, another game, let's go.
Yeah. We have to take a break, but before we do, let us share our topic of discussion with you for today's program. We want to know who is your sleeper pick from this year's Bills draft class. Who do you think is going to be a pleasant surprise on the back half of this draft class? You can let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the numbers to get on board. We are wide open for your phone calls here, and we've got open lines for you. So chime in, let us know. Who's your sleeper pick from the Bills draft class this year? 803-0550, your phone calls when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the numbers to get on board as we are asking you today, who is your sleeper on the back end of this Bills draft class? Somebody you think is going to be a pleasant surprise going forward. We know the big names at the front end of the draft, but who has caught your eye on the backside that you say, I think this guy might surprise some people? You let us know, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Got open lines for you there, but we lead off today with Rob out in Connecticut. What's up, Rob?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Steve. Always a pleasure once again. I mean, I always tell myself, I'm not going to call today. I'm not going to call. But I have to say that my sleeper is Ray Davis. don't sleep on him because Steve was actually talking about him. This guy does not run out of bounds. He wants to pound it. He wants to shove it down your throat and keep moving forward. And also, I want to touch on something that Steve was talking about with Justin Fields, using him as a returner. If you remember, they utilized Cordell Stewart as a wideout back in the day.
Yep.
So that could be possible. So I was just wondering what you thought about that. Thanks, guys, for taking my call today.
Yeah, sure. Remember, they got around – they used Cordell Stewart in a lot of ways, no question. He was drafted as a quarterback, and they used the slash. And remember, his nickname was Slash because he's quarterback slash receiver so that they could get away with some roster exemptions regarding the positions, like quarterback position. They could keep him active and just have one quarterback active and get some – flexibility on their roster by putting a slash with him. So, I don't have a – it's going to be interesting. I doubt that they have Justin Fields returning kickoffs. They might. They might. If he's taking snaps at quarterback, they won't.
I wouldn't be stunned if Ray Davis takes some kickoffs.
No, I wouldn't either.
I mean, like we were saying, it's more like a line of scrimmage play now with these new rules – and who feels more comfortable running behind people on a play that mimics a line of scrimmage play than a running back?
Yeah, and a scrambling quarterback like Justin Fields too. I mean, it's going to be interesting, the new kickoff rules. And I thought when I first heard Justin Fields might be used as returning kicks, I thought, you know, they'd set up a right return and you catch the ball and go off to your right.
Yeah.
And with a quarterback like Fields, he stops and throws it back to the left and there's nobody over there, except for one of his guys catches it, and it's a way they go off to the races. So it could be they could use him as a misdirection quarterback and throwing it across the field. I mean, Bills fans know how dangerous the throwback can be. So that's what I thought of. I don't think Justin Fields is fast enough to outrun some really fast guys on a coverage team, but he's certainly big enough to give you second thoughts about trying to jump in front of him and tackle him.
Ray Davis is, I said it on Monday, he's my favorite pick in the entire class because of the value and where he is and where he was taken and, you know, what he's overcome to have the college career that he did. I mean, I already mentioned it. He set a school record at Kentucky with 21 total touchdowns last year. But if you look at his touchdown figures – for his career, he's got 29 rushing touchdowns, 12 receiving touchdowns for a total of 41 in his career. And, you know, as we've mentioned already, over 1,000 yards at three different schools, Temple, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky. So the guy gets it done wherever he goes. I mean, yes, you're stepping up a level here, but I don't think there's any reason to doubt that guy. I know I'm not.
Right. It's a great pick. He's going to be a guy that's – I think he's going to be hard to keep off the roster. And you think, well, gosh, everybody thinks like, wow, this is going to be good. It's going to be hard to get on the field at that spot. Ty Johnson and James Cook are really good. They're pros, proven, and they've got some trust from the coaching staff.
And I got one more number that I know the coaching staff likes. Two fumbles in three seasons in the SEC.
Yeah, that's big.
That's big for them.
That's big.
For sure. So, yeah, that's a good pick. I was going to, for a sleeper, I was going to pick Javon Solomon. I think there's something to him that's going to be, I don't know what it is. Just the fact that he's a little undersized but has long arms, which I think make up for the lack of size. I don't know what it is, but I just feel like he's going to be effective early, more than people anticipate. And it's just a guess on my part, but there's just a relentlessness to his game that I think is appealing. Like, when I watch how relentless he is as a pass rusher, it reminds me of Max Crosby. Now, those are two very different players in terms of body type.
Same motor.
Max Crosby, yes, that's the similarity. Motor. Max Crosby is gifted with like 35-inch arms and a 6'6" frame.
Yeah.
But in terms of motor, they are the same player.
Yeah, and the sleep. And when we ask, you know, about your sleeper candidate or sleeper draft pick by the Bills, it's hard to, you know, you can't pick Keon Coleman because everybody expects him to be good. Cole Bishop is an easy one because it's an off position. It's a safety position, but one that Bills fans know well how important it is. Defensive tackle. I think the one that got me first off was Cedric Van Pran Granger. He lasted that long. Think about it. About any position in football where this guy played on two national championship squads, started every game for all of them, played at the highest possible level, and was a team captain, all that stuff, and not be just have teams salivating over him. That's who this guy is. The only thing he doesn't do is run fast. He's a great technician, good size, moves well to the second level, might struggle to get to the edge if you have him snap and pull out around the corner, makes calls, and he played against as good a defensive tackles as you got. I mean, he was playing against all these first-round draft picks that came out of Georgia at defensive tackle. He was practicing against them every day.
Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat at Texas, you know, they played some SEC games, so I don't think they play Georgia, though. They don't do that till next year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, he's played top-flight competition for the last 3 years. I mean, he's playing those big old boys down in Alabama, too. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good choice. I could see him perhaps challenging for a starting role. I mean, maybe you have the good fortune of he's so impressive that a year from now you put him in at center and you move McGovern back to guard.
Right.
That could happen.
Right. And I think the strength of his game, it seems to be his maturity. And that's, you know, that's what they – that's kind of part of the DNA of that position yeah. around the league. You got to have a guy that's it's not too big for, you know.
Yeah. Who is your sleeper from this year's Bills draft class? You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. That's the number to get on board. I saw this on ESPN.com, Steve. They have player projections, and I'm not going to pretend to know the analytics and the algorithms that go into this, but they basically had a category called player projections, where they took the top 160 players drafted and put a projection on them through whatever series of number formulas they utilize, and they attached a percentage to each player, the percentage likelihood that they'll be a Pro Bowl caliber player in their pro career, the percentage that they'll be a starter, a backup, or a replacement player. So for Keon Coleman, it says, based on their projections, he has a 24% chance of being a Pro Bowl player, 44% chance of being a full-time starter, 26% chance of being a backup, 3.4% as a replacement player. For Cole Bishop, 39% chance that he is a Pro Bowl safety, 41% chance that he's a starter, 16.5% backup. Dwayne Carter, 16.4% chance he's a Pro Bowl player, 33% full-time starter, 30% backup. Ray Davis, 10% Pro Bowl caliber running back, 27.6% starter, 39% backup. And then Van Pran Granger, who you just mentioned, 12.5% Pro Bowl caliber center, 18.7% full-time starter, and then 37% backup. The guy of the top six players picked, Steve, with the highest percentage to be a full-time starter, Edifuan Ulufoshio.
Really?
49.6% projected to be a full-time starter at linebacker in the league. He had the highest percentage of any of the top six picks by the Bills. Now, again,
really,
this is math that is too far off my radar
right.
with the algorithms and the advanced metrics that they use to determine this. But he had the highest percentage to be a full-time starter of the top six picks by the Bills. I don't know if I'm buying it, but more power to him if he makes it happen.
Yeah. Okay.
So there you go. He also, by the way, has a 13% chance to be a Pro Bowl player, 26% chance to be a backup. So I don't know. The projections, they're an interesting thing to talk about. But basically, it's Ulofosio, then Coleman, then Bishop, and it kind of descends from there. I don't know why Ulofosio was such a high percentage to be a starter, but the math believes in Ulofosio. So there you go, for what it's worth. I don't know. We're trying to find sleepers, and you got a guy there in the fifth round. He's almost got a 50-50 shot of being a starter. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. Well, there you go.
Let's see if he can make it happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's go.
He had a 90-tackle season last year for a national runner-up.
I wish I'd have answered our question with him.
Yeah, you would have looked like a super genius, an analytics wizard, dare we say.
Dare we say.
Yeah. Because, I mean, look, and the guy overcame a lot, too, because he had a biceps injury that cut his sophomore season short. Then he had an ACL injury that cut his junior season short. Then he comes back last year with a 90-tackle season as Washington goes all the way to the national title game.
Right.
So it's a pretty good showing for a guy that's had to clear a couple of hurdles here as he earned second-team All-American honors.
Yeah.
Got to take a break here, but when we come back, more of your phone calls. Who is your sleeper from this year's Bills draft class? Nobody from those top three rounds. You let us know who your sleeper is next on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, asking you for your sleeper pick for the Bills 2024 draft class. Let's go to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And waiting there for us is Rex in Tonawanda. What do you got for us, Rex?
Hey, guys, I got a bonus for you. I got two sleepers. First one, Brandon Bean. He must have been sleeping the whole first round while all those top wide receivers were getting drafted. Not too thrilled about that. Secondly, though, I think Travis Clayton, that guy is a giant, quick feet. He's going to be under Aaron Cromer learning. I think there's potential there. And from a seventh-round pick to a starter, I'm calling it in 3 years. I'm calling it right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a development project. I don't think there's any question about that, Rex. Having very little football acumen, he comes from a rugby background, as most of us know by now. But, yeah, the athleticism is readily apparent. Hand time 4.79 40 at 301 pounds. That'll get your attention. But there's also lateral agility there, change of direction skills, which are more important as an offensive lineman. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting developmental project.
I'll say this, too, not for nothing, that Brandon Bean, watching all those wide receivers get picked, there was only four of them that got picked ahead of him. They got the chance of the fifth one, which is exactly what we talked about for weeks on end. So he really didn't stand by and watch guys get picked. He knew he wasn't going to have a shot at the first three, and the fourth one went 23, and it was just too expensive to move up. So he's not sitting by watching those guys. He had no shot at those guys.
Yeah, which is why he never made a call to go up there.
Which is why he didn't. Which is why he didn't.
The night of the
move.
Draft. Yeah.
So So. Yeah, he didn't sit by and just watch those guys get drafted, and you're mad at him for doing that. He had no chance at those guys. And when it did get to him, he didn't want the guy that the other team wanted. They could have him. Give us those. Let's move up 59 spots and 27 spots.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they were sitting there at 32, and they would have taken Coleman there anyway. So you move back one more spot, and you gain another pick.
You gain another pick.
60 spots from 200 to 141.
60 spots. And so
that's two rounds.
Yeah. And the other one's 20. They went up 27 rounds, which is almost a full round.
And by the way, 141 was the center that a lot of people are picking to be a starter in a year or two as their sleeper.
Yeah, so it's not like he was sitting there like didn't care. He couldn't do anything. And I'll say it again, never get in the way of your enemy if they're making a mistake. And if you don't think you want that guy, and they do, let them have him. And let them make them pay you to take him, which is what happened.
And that's And I think that's the difference between NFL GMs and a lot of fans of the draft. Like, fans of the draft get a player that's their favorite, that they think is the best fit for their team, and that's the only thing they see. They don't widen their scope to explore other options or other ways of getting to a place where your team is better with somebody else.
I wonder what percent, and I know there's some amount there. They didn't care if they took Xavier Worthy or not. Just trading with the Chiefs for anything, giving the Chiefs anything that they wanted was bad enough. They didn't care. If the Chiefs would have wanted to trade for a bag of footballs, they would have been mad at dealing with them.
We did find out that the Chiefs were trying to trade up higher in the round to get Amarius Mims, the offensive tackle from Georgia. And when they couldn't do that, they kind of switched plans and went up to get a receiver. And then obviously with their second pick, they got Kingsley Sumaiyataia.
The thing that did it, too, was, and this is stuff we talk about this on the pod this week, Xavier Leggett, a guy we had spoken about the Bills getting him and him being a guy like Debo Samuel and San Francisco being yada, 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 yada. Leggett gets all the way to 32 where the Bills are picking, and Leggett has already started
tweeting
that the Carolina Panthers had told Leggett that they were going to take him in the first pick of the second round the next day. He started tweeting that before the first round was over. So, in doing so, that kind of forced Carolina's hand to thinking, man, the Bills are looking for a receiver. They traded back. Worthy's gone. They're probably going to take Leggett because they probably think about it the same way we do. So we better offer the Bills a trade up just to flip the picks. So that gives Buffalo the proceeds from that trade just to flip one pick. And they didn't want anything to do with Leggett. They wanted Keon Coleman anyway.
Yeah.
So the weirdness of the draft where one of the draft picks starts tweeting out what the team is telling him, it's kind of a little bit of a no-no. But, I mean, the kid's not working for him anyway. He can do what he wants.
Worked out for him.
Worked out for him.
Let's go to Terrell in Buffalo. What do you got for us?
Hey, thanks for having me on. So I think the sleeper pick is going to be the linebacker in the fifth round from Washington. I like his size. I like his ability to cover. Reminds me a lot of Matt Milano in terms of where he's being drafted, and Bean has shown that he has success taking linebackers late in the draft.
He does have a history of that. You're 100% on the money with that one. I won't debate that. I mean, even Baylen Specter, who was a sixth-round pick, has been on this roster and, you know, worked into the lineup when injury has struck. So, yeah, there is a track record of sorts there. I mean, even from an undrafted perspective, Tyrell Dodson, you know, he played a role on this defense the last couple of years after being a good special teamer. So, yeah, I get it.
I'll tell you this. If Olofosio comes into Buffalo and has a season, you know, whether he gets on the field, I don't know who he's going to play in front of. I mean, because the Bills are set. But let's say the guy comes in and makes a splash, does something. You're going to have T-shirts with his front tooth smile.
You might.
Because he's missing one of his two front teeth. He's got a gap. And it's real distinctive. And he's got a great smile, great dude. You can't, you know, it's one of those smiles that makes you smile. So you could see that happening. And he is, I mean, just since we started this show, we're starting to get a lot of, you know, a lot of positive vibes about Olofosio.
He's another guy like Solomon who's short. He's 6 foot and a half inch, but he's got long arms. He's got 33-inch arms for a 6-footer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not long, but for a 6-footer, it's longer than normal. So there's something to be said about that, especially at the second level and on the edge as a pass rusher. Got to take a break here, but when we come back, our second hour of the show will begin with NFL draft analyst Chad Reuter from NFL.com. We're going to run through the Bills draft class, maybe even dabble in some of the undrafted reported rookie signings to see what he thinks about those. But he had grades for the Bills for all 3 days. We'll weigh in on those next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
on Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, hour number two here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on Bills Live. Thanks for joining us. And we'll get on to the sleepers here in this Bills draft class in just a second, but pleased to be joined now by NFL.com draft researcher and analyst Chad Ryder joining us on the program. Good to have you, Chad. I want to jump right in here because I think your overall grade for the Bills class was a B+, but your highest grade, because you went day one, day two, day three, was for day three. You gave them an A. Maybe just shed a little light on why you felt so positively about what they hauled in day three.
Well, I'm sure that the fact that I had three of the guys projected to be picked by the Bills in my 7-round mock draft had nothing to do with it, right? Had nothing to do with it. No, look, I think they got really good value in the players they had, and they hit good needs. They hit needs for this team, and I think Wilfoscio is really a good linebacker. Kind of looks like a running back, but he doesn't play like one. And I think he was a really solid pick for them. I figured they'd look at him. Cedric Van Pran is a guy that if they need to, they could play him as a rookie. He's an experienced guy. He bounced back from an average sophomore year, played very well as a junior. And if things with Connor and McGovern, if they need to shake things up in the line a little bit, he can step right in. So you gotta love that. Grable has grown a lot since his time at Jacksonville State as a tight end, and he's continued to grow during his career at UCF. And if he continues to build his leg strength and able to really get that anchor, he could be a phenomenal swing tackle for this team in the future. Daquan Hardy was another guy I thought they could pick. Not only for his great return skills, but also as a guy that's going to be able to play nickel for them. Maybe not as much this year as he gets into the game a little bit, but in time he's gonna be a part of that rotation, I think. And so Ray Davis. Look, Ray Davis is a back that he pretty much anybody who followed this draft goes, look, you're gonna be able to get Ray Davis on Ray 3. He's gonna be a really solid pro for you. You can catch the ball. He has a good feel in traffic, and he has enough acceleration once he gets to the open field to really be a difference maker. So I really thought they did a great job finding value for spots that they needed players.
And I thought it was interesting too. Now, certainly this is a season, an off season where the Bills had more departures than they have had in the last handful of years, and significant losses as well, contributors. But they did get in this draft, albeit with 10 picks, they got help at all three levels of both sides of the ball. Yeah. Offensive line, running back, wide receiver, defensive line, defensive end, linebacker, and corner and safety. So they really bolstered the roster at every single position group.
And they needed to find a return guy too. I think you want Shakir to really be a receiver as much as possible to take hold of that role this year. So you needed to find a return guy. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here about special teams, you, but when you find a guy like Hardy that can play on defense and who as a punt returner is willing to take that first step forward. And that's so important. And he's got the speed once he gets in the open field. So when you can fill holes on defense and offense and get special teams help as well, you know, it was a really good draft for those guys, which is no surprise because Brandon Breeden and his staff do a great job every year.
He did take, you know, a different approach to this draft, though, Chad, because in three of the last five drafts, he's traded up in round one. This year, he trades out completely, but he parlays that into three day two picks instead of just one, which is what they had at the outset. And he told us after night two, he had more players on their board with second round grades than with first round grades. So I think moving back was a very comfortable move for him to make, knowing he would have a bounty of players to choose from.
Yeah. And I mean, I think with the trades that they did, you know, in the first round, they didn't necessarily gain picks, but they gained value in picks. And that's something you have to think about when you're making these trades, right? Are you willing to take a fourth round pick, or are you more interested in swapping your fifth for their third? So you're gaining that value. And, you know, it's not always an easy choice. Some teams want loads more picks. Some teams want more value in those picks. Like, for example, when the Packers and the Bills made the trade for Rasul Douglas, the Packers didn't gain picks, but they moved from a fifth to a third. So it really depends on the situation and all that. But I think, again, like you said, even a team with as strong as a roster as the Bills had, you want competition on the back end of that roster. And they got guys that are going to be able to give them competition this year and then maybe sit on the practice squad if they don't make the team. And then next year they'll be back in the fold too. So I think they accomplished a lot of things in this draft.
Was this draft a sign of where the draft has come to, or is it a trend? You had six quarterbacks, first 12 picks. I mean, it's unprecedented. You had offensive tackles, you had 14 players picked before they even picked a defensive player. Is this where the draft is headed, or is this the peak of where it's gone?
I think it was sort of a one-off. Now, every year people say, oh, but next year's class isn't that good. Well, you know, guess what happened? Jaden Daniels was great this year, what people didn't expect. Bo Nix stepped up, and people didn't necessarily expect that. And next year we've got some guys that people aren't talking about right now that are going to be in the conversation. So I expect that it will have – I mean, it's been typical now for a while that we've had three or four quarterbacks go in the first round, and I expect that to continue. I don't think we're going to see five or six every year. Especially since this year was really high demand at the position at the top of the draft. So that's not going to happen every year.
Chad, knowing you're a researcher also, I don't know if you've ever researched this, but the Bills, the last several years with a veteran roster, have not been able to keep a lot of their late day three picks on their 53. They put them on the practice squad, and they get poached away by other clubs.
And they're on
53-man rosters. I mean, Alex Austin, their seventh-round pick last year, just got re-signed by the Patriots to stay on their roster. And Nick Broeker, their sixth-round pick last year, the offensive lineman out of Ole Miss, is still in Houston. And this isn't the first time this happened. Jack Anderson's in Indianapolis. He was a seventh-round pick 3 years ago. I mean, I can't imagine how frustrating it's got to be for Brandon Bean, like, his personnel department is doing their job on day three, and they can't hold on to those players to develop them. Now, it might be a little different this year with the roster turnover they've experienced. I think there is a greater chance for all of their day three picks to make the 53, but it's a risk that you're taking. I mean, you're talking about Tylan Grable having to grow into his frame, put on some more weight, you know, now that he's an offensive tackle and not a tight end anymore. And I'm hoping that the Bills can hold on to him long enough to see the fruits of that labor.
Yeah. Look, it's a nice problem to have. Okay. It's a nice problem to have because there are plenty of teams out there that have been, that are not evaluating these players necessarily as well as they could, or they're reaching for guys at other positions and then they're scouring the deeper teams for more talent. And that's just part of the plan. I mean, you just have to evaluate the guys the best you can. And if they can't make the squad and they get poached by others, that's what you have to deal with. Interestingly, like a lot of the undrafted guys have this year too, aren't bad players either. Half of them could have been drafted. So if you do a good job and other teams are able to, you know, quote, take advantage of that, that's just part of the deal when you have a good staff, when you make good evaluations and, you know, you live with that. You're just happy that you have the best roster you can to win games on the field. And that's the bottom line.
Yeah, usually undrafted free agent guys, you kind of go under the radar. Nobody knows who they are. But then you get a guy that has the name Frank Gore. And people are like, oh, hey, I know that guy. And right? So the Bills signed Frank Gore's son.
Yeah.
Reportedly signed his son. Some of these names on that a lot of people don't know about. And you said half of these guys should have been, could have been drafted in other circumstances. Yep. Talk to us a little bit about maybe some of the guys that are reportedly looking at the Bills.
Well, I mean, Rondell Bothridge was really good at Wake Forest and, productive at Oklahoma, a really solid player. He wasn't a plus athlete in his workout, so that hurt his game. But like a guy like Keaton Bills from Utah, okay, really strong guard, really strong player, not a plus athlete, but a fine player. This is one of these guys that is going to stick in the league for a while, and you got him, you know, off the street. And if this is a guy that ends up on the practice squad, it really won't surprise me if another team signed him. There's like Mike Edwards from Campbell's another name that a lot of people don't know. But for a guy his size, 340 pounds, 330 pounds, he can really move. And I was surprised he wasn't drafted. I think he's going to be a guy that sticks in the league as well. So this is what a good scouting staff does. They pick the guys they need to pick, And when the free agency rolls around after the draft, they've been in conversation with these guys for a long time before the draft ends. They're able to convince them, hey, come here. We'll give you a shot to make the roster, and that's all you can do. So they've done a really good job both during and after the draft.
You mentioned Boothroyd. Is he like a true edge guy? Because he's a little bigger, you know, than a you know, bend the pass rush arc kind of edge. Is he more of like a an edge setting, run stopping guy that offers you some pass rush? Like, what is his kind of description?
Yeah, I mean, he's not quite as big as Greg Rousseau, but he's in the same thing. He's not a bendy guy. And look, there's a lot of guys that will get picked because of the flexibility. And look, Javon Solomon, who I didn't even talk about before, he's a shorter guy on the edge, right? But he has some flexibility, and he has the strength to play through blocks and avoid blocks. He's got a nice Euro step. And so, I mean, these guys can win in different ways. And you're really looking for guys that can win in whatever way they can to hold the line of scrimmage, to do their assignment in whatever way they can do. And I think Boothroyd's a guy that can hold the line very well. And if you try to escape to the sideline, he has enough athleticism to go get you, or at least, you know, allow the linebacker to come get you. He can do some things to help you, as, you know, coming in sub packages and if injuries hit, that kind of thing.
One of the things about the draft, 32 teams trying to pick from the same pool of players, all of whom have different needs. Some are in dire straits and others are just trying to put the cherry on top of the cake. Who are the big, who are the teams that came the furthest? I know that there are some teams like Minnesota and Chicago who had multiple first rounders who got some really, really talented guys. What are some teams that really managed it very well and who are tangibly better today than they were a week ago?
Well, the one team that when people ask me going into the draft, which team needs to hit a home run? And to me, it was Arizona, because they've been stuck in this rut of mediocrity for a long time. And they need to take that next step to compete in the NFC, for the NFC title. And, you know, getting the guys that they got, they had a lot of picks coming in and they decided, hey, we're not going to trade down, you know, from four. We're going to take Marvin Harrison. We're going to take Darius Robinson at the end of the first round, that edge rusher we need. Trey Benson in the third round was a pick that I had forecast in my 7-round mock draft. I'm taking Trey Benson. So they did a lot of great things. And if Kyler Murray and can stay healthy and these guys make improvements, this is an Arizona team that can get up to the playoff contention this year. And they have to, because they've just been stuck in a rut for too long and they need to make that next step.
All right. Well, listen, Chad, we thank you for the insight on that. We appreciate it. And we'll keep an eye out for the undrafteds to be made official next week. But, yeah, people are already interested in Frank Gore Jr., as you can understand. He did spend a season here, the senior, that is. I'm just amazed that their careers are only about 3 yards apart or 3 years apart from one another.
I know. And he's a guy that's not a great athlete, but like his father – teams are going to wish that probably they took him in this draft or, you know, thought of him a little sooner, because he's a really solid back that's going to play in the league for a while.
Right.
Chad, thanks as always. Thanks, appreciate Chad. The time.
Thank you guys for having me on.
All right. That's Chad Ryder, NFL.com researcher and draft analyst. Yeah, he had a 7-round mock draft, which to me is an insane project.
Yeah.
And he had three hits for the Bills picks. I mean, not all in the exact same spot, but three of the players the Bills drafted, he had in his 7-round mock going to the Bills.
Well, I'm being a little bit facetious, but you'd never know he was insane just by talking to him like we did.
That's
7-round.
A 1-round mock is enough. Like 7 rounds going through 258 some odd picks. Good Lord.
And he hit three.
We should have asked him how long that takes. How long do you think that takes to do that?
It's got to be weeks.
Like, you got to be hitting that for 2 or 3
weeks,
days, right?
Yeah.
You're not doing that. That's not a one-nighter.
No, that's not even an all-nighter. That's more than that. It's impossible. It's literally impossible.
It's a big undertaking.
And the thing that, you know, obviously throws all these mock drafts crazy is, you know, you got four picks in the first, four trades in the first round. You got three trades or five trades in the second round, whatever, or 10 trade. What was it? Like, it was like 10 trades, wasn't it? In the second round of this draft?
10 trades in the second round, only 4 in the first.
Yeah, so your mock goes out the window and down the tubes. But even having said that, he got 3 guys for the Buffalo Bills on the money.
That in and of itself is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
You would think you'd get three guys league-wide in one of any seven or eight picks they had in the draft. You get one guy for them. Mm-hmm. And that would always be a one or two first pick, right? So it's pretty impressive that he got three guys for the Bills that, you know, he mocked to them.
Now, you heard Chad mention Ulofosio and how he liked him
right.
as a linebacker. And our good friend Dane Brugler, who puts together the most comprehensive draft guide I've ever seen, The Beast. I've got the page on Ulofosio and what he wrote about him. First of all, as we mentioned, he's only 6'1⁄2", 236 pounds, but he ran a 4.56, had a 39.5-inch vertical, and had a 4.33 short shuttle, which is pretty good. Also benched 21 reps on 225, and that's with 33-inch arms. This is how Dane Brugler describes his strengths. Swarms to the football like a moth to a flame. Swiftly reads his keys and adjusts his sight lines appropriately to get a jump on plays. Flashes lateral burst and the range to influence multiple zones. Long arms and strong, aggressive hands come in handy when disengaging from blocks or finishing tackles. Shows a natural feel in zone coverage. That's important in a Bills defense. Communicates well, makes a lot of pre-snap calls. Voted a senior captain, described by his teammates as a positive and infectious leader and the type of person guys want to be around. Former walk-on and was named he won an award that went to the most inspirational Huskies player as voted by the players. He was a regular on kick return and punt return coverages last season and had a block punt, which is on our highlight reel that our MSG viewers are just watching right now. Started every game as a super senior after missing the previous 2 years to injury.
Yeah, 9.67 raw athletic score on a scale of 10. So
that's good.
He's got enough physical tools. And, yeah, he's short. That's it. Everything else checks
out big.
Yeah,
that's the negative.
Everything else checks out big. And I got to tell you, that's when you watch him play, yeah, that's what kind of jumps at you. And I know this too. We're kind of getting used to this. Brownie and I, you watch Brandon Bean and McDermott and these scouts and all the guys that they seem to produce out of every draft. They start to get this, well, that DNA thing about them. They all, you know, they're all from the same family of players. You know, I mean, they high motor. Their teammates love them. And then physical traits.
Yeah.
And,
so,
you know, they all have a specific mix of all those things.
So Chad Ryder, the guy we just had on from NFL.com, he gave the Bills a B-plus grade overall, day one grade of B, day two grade of A-minus, day three grade of A. You get a grade of B and you don't even pick anybody on day one. That's pretty good.
Well, that's because he liked the trade-outs.
Yeah.
You move up and get so much value for those picks and still get the exact guy you knew you wanted to pick if you would have stayed put, and then to add those valued picks up in addition to that, it's just a smart move. And I'll say this, the only reason people would even throw a dart at what the Bills did was because they don't like Keon Coleman. They liked Xavier Worthy better, or Xavier Legette better, or Ricky Pearsall. They liked him better. The Bills didn't, and what are you going to do? You can.
Yeah.
So it's hard to criticize it. They are the ones that got to live with the pick, and they got the guy they wanted.
Yeah, the eighth receiver off the board.
Yeah. Think about it though. You try. Why? What did we see in Keon Coleman? Why didn't we like him? He's young. Okay, yeah. He was really productive at Michigan State. Really productive at Florida State. But he's young.
Yeah.
I mean, that you kind of run out of things.
Slow 40 time.
Slow 40 time.
Plays faster.
Slow 40 time. Faster over here in this other drill that they're doing. It's he fast over here. Looks fast on film. He's jumping over people on the field.
38-inch vertical.
Yeah. So
how about that? He's got a 38-inch vertical. Ulofosio, 39.5. Should set up a rec league basketball team.
We all have our favorites.
And I didn't pick – I certainly didn't – Keon Coleman wasn't on my radar. I'll be the first to tell you that. I thought it was going to be Leggett or – you know, we all had thought Brian Thomas Jr. The closer we got to the draft, the less likely it became. Brownie had Brian Thomas Jr. on the whiteboard months ago, and he was ahead of the curve.
Problem is too many people liked him.
Well, they were just like you.
The one other thing that Chad Ryder wrote in his write-up that I liked reading – Ray Davis's tenacity as a runner is the perfect complement to James Cook.
Yeah.
Telling you, there's going to be a lot of steam built up for Ray Davis by the time we get to training camp.
Let's go, man. Bless his heart, man. I hope he comes out and does all that stuff. You wish the best for these guys, not just because they're on your team, but can you find out what kind of guy they are. You read their bios and where they came from and what they've been through and – yeah, it's fun.
He's going to be a very easy guy to root for.
And I'll say this, too. That's not just the Bills. That's across the league. You get these guys coming out of college, and they've all got a unique story. And, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, the ones that don't have that unique story is the one that drops down the board. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, A.D. Mitchell plummeted from being what looked like a top pick to – not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because of his backstory.
Yeah, character concerns.
Yeah.
He slipped all the way to pick 52 when he was thought by many to be a top 25 pick. So he went twice as late as everybody thought he would. Daquan Hardy, Chad Ryder mentioned, as a bona fide punt return candidate for the Bills right out of the chute, fresh out of the box. And I remember reading this over the weekend when I was still doing work here, One Bills Drive on Saturday for day three. I had looked him up, and he had a very storied high school career in Pittsburgh, playing for Penn Hills, which he led to a state championship in 2018 with an undefeated 16-0 record. He produced a 4-touchdown performance in the state title game. He had a 27-yard catch, a 74-yard catch, 100-yard interception return, and an 84-yard kickoff return in the same game, and then went on to win State Player of the Year honors. I wonder why.
You think?
Oh my God. The only thing he didn't do was throw one. I mean, interception return, kick return, and 2 touchdown catches. He didn't throw one or run one in. I mean, my God, that's unbelievable. And look, I know it's high school, but
that's
still.
When the head coach is on the other side of the end, go, who is that guy?
That's a good day.
Who is that guy? He's killing us.
I mean, I don't know if you ever topped that day. That's an unbelievable day. I mean, getting drafted might top it, but.
It's a good day.
Man.
It's a good day.
That is something else. I love reading this stuff about these guys. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh, some of the stuff is awful.
This
off
guy
the wall.
Did what?
He, like, wait. He what? How's you know, you
the
think
most.
In this day and age, you feel like you should hear about all that stuff somewhere.
Yes. Like, the most ridiculous one. If you ever want to just laugh out loud, go look up Derrick Henry's high school rushing totals.
Oh, my.
If you want to laugh, just outright laugh out loud, because they're so ridiculous, you can't even believe they're real.
Think about it. I mean, I played high school football at 147 pounds. This just in, Derrick Henry didn't. He was so big and so fast. You guys are turning down chances to tackle him.
So if you had to guess how many rushing yards Derrick Henry had in high school, what would be your answer? Total rushing yards.
In 4 years of high school, I will say something like 15,000 yards.
You're actually over. 12,124 yards.
So he had 4 3,000-yard seasons.
Yeah, there were his senior year. He averaged 327 yards rushing a game.
327 rushing a game.
That's just so stupid.
That's amazing.
I mean, could you imagine what that looked like every week? Yeah. Parents probably didn't even go to games. Like, what are we going to watch him run over people again? That's no fun.
No, those are the games you go to when your team's, yeah.
Oh, my God.
320 a game. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Guess how many touchdowns he had in his senior year?
Out of how many games? Tell me how many games.
13 games. How many touchdowns did Derrick Henry have?
60.
55. In 13 games. He had 153 touchdowns in his career. Oh, my God. It's so ridiculous.
That is crazy.
You know how many receiving touchdowns he had?
Zero.
Zero.
Why? Why throw?
You don't
why
need
take
to throw
a chance?
It to him. Just put it in his hands.
Just get it to him, and it's the fastest, easiest way to get it to him is to.
Oh my
hand
God!
It
it's always
him.
Good for a laugh.
Hand
every
it to
time,
him.
12,000 rushing yards. Oh my gosh! And I mean, he's running from the jump, like from his freshman year. Played 11 games, 2,465 yards. Good God. He's just
that's amazing.
Yeah, that's freakish. For
you
sure.
Think? Tell me this. You think Derrick Henry, Hall of Famer?
It's
got to be in the conversation.
I think he's close. Yeah, I think he's very close.
You know why
he's
I
not.
Think he's got a really good chance to do it? Because he's always a Titan. First, always, you know, complete whole career as a Titan.
Well, yeah. Now he's with the Ravens.
Right.
I mean,
but
so,
you know what I mean.
Yes, I think more importantly, he was a dominant running back in an era where the game went to the air.
Right.
Still ridiculously productive running back in an era where everybody was throwing the ball. I mean, he was an anomaly.
He was absolutely different, absolute difference maker. So, yeah, I'm good for him, but that's crazy.
We got to take a break here. When we come back, we'll see what you have to say about who is the sleeper in the Bills draft class on the tweet sheet. And if we have time, maybe a little NFL true-false. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and going to crack open the tweet sheet to see who you feel is the sleeper in Buffalo's 2024 draft class. Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And Mickey chimes in with Van Pran Granger could be a starter. So he may be the sleeper of the group. Other guys have a chance to contribute, whether depth or teams. I really like this draft class. One more class like this next year, and the Bills have a super team. Super Bowl or bust. Mickey's feeling optimistic.
Yeah. We always get the odd caller who calls in and just drags Brandon Bean about the way he drafts, like he's never drafted a good guy. And except for Josh. And I don't know where they I disagree. Brandon has done this team is where it is in large measure to the players they have playing on it and what Sean McDermott gets out of those players. And your assertion and observation about what other teams think about the bottoms of our roster, where we've got our guys that are on our practice squad can't get on the field or going to other teams and not just staying there, they're getting extended and they're playing. It tells you all you want to know about the work this personnel department does. And I think the way they handled last Thursday's draft, trading out of the first round, is another example of how they know what the draft is, how it's supposed to work, and what you got to do to be successful there. You got to know the players. You got to know your own needs. You got to know as much as you can about what the other teams are going to do and be willing to go up or down to get a guy. And he has done now, particularly with this year, added into what he's done in years past, they've done it all. And they've gotten really good value up and down their draft classes almost every single year. Mm-hmm. Almost every single year.
From 17 for MVP, they go with Javon Solomon. 16 sacks last year. Yes, I know it's the Sun Belt Conference, but still. Not to mention, I can also think of another edge rusher who went to Troy. He must be talking about OCU Manura, who is a Troy product.
Where did
play for the Giants?
Yeah,
really successful pass rusher. So that's a good reference. Jess says Cole Bishop. He's probably a backup right now, but he reminds me of Poyer the way he can play anywhere on the field. Looks like an explosive tackler with the ability to get picks. Go Bills. Yeah, it's funny that Jess mentions that, because I saw a little bit of Poyer and Bishop too, watching his tape before the draft, which kind of put him on my radar. You know, and then they talked to him at the Senior Bowl. They sat down and interviewed him at the Combine. So you knew that he was on the Bills' radar as well. But yeah, there's a little bit of Poyer in him. I would say that. I don't know if their games completely match up, but there are some elements of his game that I think do run parallel to that of Jordan Poyer's game.
Yeah, he seems, you know, he sticks his nose in. I mean, you watch his film for any length of time, and that's what you notice. That guy's in on the ball all the time, making tackles, getting guys to the edge of the field, stepping up into the gap. He's not afraid of the contact. And in this day and age, it's kind of an important trait these days, because mm-hmm. you don't spend time tackling in the off season, and you need a guy who can do it, because you want guys to be able to stay on the field in different situations. And certainly Bishop seems to be one of those guys who the physicality up in the box, he's just as comfortable there as he is playing in space out in the secondary.
Matt on the tweet sheet says, Solomon, I'll bet he leads the team in sacks in 2025. Big Baller Bean got a steal in the fifth.
Well, that's
leading sacker in 2025.
Not this year, but next year.
That's okay. A projection.
Hey, all right.
I'll take it.
No, yeah, for a fifth rounder, let's go. Yeah. I just hope he doesn't lead this team in sacks with four.
Well, yes, again. I will agree right. with that, too.
I mean, leading yeah. the team and having a 15-sack season don't have to be the same thing.
Yeah, we're not too far removed from the leading sacker on this team having six sacks.
Right.
Only a couple of years removed from that. From the Duke of Blaisdell, Cedric Van Pran Granger, a three-year starter at an SEC school that gets drafted in round five, has something to prove. He is my sleeper and eventually the next Kent Tull. Well, hold on a second. Now we're talking really big. I mean, I like the pick as much as anybody, but
well,
now
he
you're
has
talking
that,
about the best center his, ever to lace him up.
Yeah, his skill set is a little bit reminiscent of Kent's.
How so?
Smart and mature. Kent was that way. He wasn't the best athlete either, although he was as a kid. He was a really good athlete. But, you know, he got up and got heavy enough to play center in the NFL, USFL for a cup of coffee. He gets to Buffalo and really fell in just the perfect time, right situation. And you know, Kent flourished here. And, you know, was a absolute foundational piece and a pillar of a team that went to four straight Super Bowls. Now, Cedric Van Pran Granger may be that kind of player. It's a whole high mark to, you know, high bar to set, but that's his characteristic: the maturity, the intelligence, and certainly the chops to play in big moments seem to be his. And that, you know, that's the hallmark of Kent's game as well.
Joseph on the tweet sheet says Van Pran Granger will be the starting center at some point this season, because he earned it, not due to injury. Also, I feel Solomon coming from an FCS school is very underrated. Get him on the field with Groot and Miller. Teach him up. He should explode. That is an option if you want to go that way. You can kick Rousseau inside. You know, if Solomon really impresses right. and you want to get him out there for some designated, obvious passing down situations.
Yeah, they put Rousseau down inside because of his length and he can get up the field. And you put him in there with Ed, who's explosive and fast. And then you put Vaughn on one side and Solomon on the other. Yeah, you've got some guys who can bend. And there's certainly going to be situations where you're not in the least bit worried about them turning around and handing it off in those either third and 13. You're not, you know, put those guys, you know, put the track team out there.
Right. Know. Go turbo.
Yeah.
Next up is Seth, who says, Hardy, he's going to be Hester 2.0. Oh, Hall of Fame right. return, man. I'd love it.
All right.
Hopefully he doesn't have to play regular down and distance. Yeah, I mean, Daquan Hardy he's a little guy. I mean, he's probably only a slot corner on defense. You know, he's about 5'8", 5'9", and 180 pounds. Not a big dude. He plays big. You know, he doesn't mind contact, but he's just not a big dude. And with the size of receivers these days outside, I think that's a tough ask. Who knows? Maybe he proves me wrong. But the Bills typically like longer guys outside anyway.
Yeah.
And Brandon Bean has pretty much confirmed that, you know, he's a nickel. He's a slot guy.
Yeah, and he's got the athleticism to be inside where the receiver normally has an inside or outside release. You can't, you know, if you're an outside receiver and it's the defender has the freedom to give you one or the other. He can take one away from you right away. As a slot defender, you kind of have to – you get a head up on the guy. He can go inside or outside on the release, and you have to have some real athleticism and some quicks to defend there. So, yeah, his athleticism says, yeah, he's a slot guy. And his size also says that.
Yeah. Josh on the tweet sheet says, Ray Davis, dude looks like the real deal, and I love his story. Yeah, he's. I told you, he's going to be an easy guy to root for, Steve.
Yeah. Bills fans have no shortage of people to root for.
Yeah. Will on the tweet sheet says, Solomon reminds me of Vaughn. If he can bring him under his wing and work with him, I think we got Vaughn Miller Jr. Wow. People are getting excited here.
Okay. Yeah.
Macho Man Josh Savage says, Hardy, he could be the new punt returner, kick returner, and dime corner. Yeah, I mean, I think right now he's definitely in the running to be the team's punt returner this year. As long as he demonstrates ball security back there, his athleticism and dynamism on returns in his time at Penn State, I mean, he's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Turn him loose.
Yeah. Thanks for all the contributions there on the tweet sheet. We have to take a break. When we come back, one segment to go. I got to talk to Steve about my agita that I'm going to have tonight for
what?
A little NBA playoffs. We'll discuss that when we return here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, one segment to go here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Going to hop back on the phones here as we've been asking you for your sleeper picks all day long from the Bills draft class. But we go to Ryan in Albany next. Let me pull him up here. What do you got for us, Ryan?
How you doing? I'm jumping in late to the show, but I want to talk about Keon Coleman reaching out to Andre Reed. If you had any insider information on that, is he possibly looking for like help like Mold is helping Shakir? And how beneficial could it be for Mold to be working with one guy and Andre to be working with another guy if that's what he could do? And does that step on like the toes of the wide receivers coach, even though it's like off season workouts possibly, or do the wide receivers coach like welcome any help that the players could offer?
I think Keon reached out, the way I understand it, Keon reached out to Dre because just out of respect and saying, hey, I'm going to your spot and I know where the club is and I know your history with the club. I think it was more like that.
And what do I need to know about playing in Buffalo?
What do I need to know? And all these guys have somebody who trains them, most of them, not all of them. Most of these guys have a guy who trains them. The fact that Eric is training Shakir is probably – a little bit of happenstance. I don't know that it would have changed had Shakir been playing for anybody else. They got a relationship. So certainly it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that if you're coming into a new environment to reach out to the guys who have been through the environment and ask them what about it? And to have a guy who has done it at the highest level teach you how to do it.
Right.
So that's both those guys.
Yeah, I don't get the sense that Andre's going to be
Andre's not coaching him.
Steve, you're going to have to help me with my agita tonight, watching Game 6, Knicks Sixers, after they blew Game 5. Game doesn't start till 9. Go. I'm not going to make it.
I know. It's one of those games.
It's a late one because they got Bucks Pacers before it.
We'll be there.
They got to pull this thing out. We'll see you tomorrow, 1 o'clock, for a Friday edition, OBL Fan Friday Mailbag. Don't miss it.